Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, listeners. This is just a reminder that I'm doing a free online workshop on Thursday, the 18th of April at 10 o'clock in the morning, UK time. It's part of the Advanced English Summit, a series of 10 workshops by 10 different teachers on a variety of subjects. The overall aim is to help you progress to an advanced level of English and beyond. The topic of my presentation is vocabulary. It's called How to Really Learn Vocabulary and Not Just Stare at Word Lists. And if you'd like to attend, you can. It's completely free. Everybody's welcome, but you do need to sign up. So just check the link in the description of this episode. Click the link, then enter your email address, then confirm the email that you'll receive. And then after that, you will get all the details of the summit, the program of all the different presentations, including mine, and you'll get a Zoom link so you can join the talk and watch it as it happens live. If you can't attend because 10 in the morning UK time is not convenient for you, then still sign up because you will get access to a recording of my presentation afterwards. Okay, so Thursday the 18th of April, 10 o'clock in the morning UK time, How to Really Learn Vocabulary, that's my talk. And so click the link in the description to sign up to get the details, and I'll see you there. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. Welcome to the podcast. You all right? How's it going? You all right, mate? Yeah, good. Let me tell you about what you can expect from this episode. So in this one, you're going to hear me in conversation with Elena Mutunono, who is a business coach for language teachers. And we're going to talk about learning English, teaching English as a non-native speaker, and managing your career as an online language teacher. Here's some information about Elena from her website, elenamutunono.com. So Elena is a seasoned business coach who helps online language teachers move beyond one-to-one lessons and create a smarter system that lets you teach on your own terms and guarantees a stable income. So she helps teachers to develop their career, to manage their career, to work out how to continue being a language teacher in a sustainable way. Okay, because being a teacher, being a language teacher, being an English teacher in my case, although this is wonderful, it can be draining. It can drain the energy from you unless you manage your time carefully. Okay, now for so many English teachers, this work that we do, helping people learn English, this is our livelihood. For some people, teaching English is a sort of a holiday job, or it's a sort of a bit of a fun thing that you can do while traveling, right? That does happen. You know, you hear about people who teach a bit of English on their year off or something like that. But for so many teachers, this is our job, this is our career, and this is our livelihood. And doing this work long term in a sustainable way requires careful time management, a business strategy that works, the right work-life balance, and a good sort of healthy mindset to make sure that we avoid burnout and exhaustion, which does happen to a lot of teachers. Burnout, that's basically where you just use all of your energy resources and you're just exhausted and you're unable to get the energy back in order to be able to do the work properly, and you just kind of flatline. It's a horrible experience. I've managed to avoid it most of the time. Sometimes I feel a bit burnt out and I need to take time off and find ways to get my energy back. But it's, I mean, obviously people in most careers have to consider these things, managing energy levels. But in this episode, we're going to talk about this from the teacher's point of view. So we talk about all of this. But I also wanted to ask Elena about her own story and her background, because English is not her first language. And she's progressed from being a learner of English to being the inspiring business coach that she is today. And so the plan is to talk about learning English, being an English teacher when English isn't your first language, taking control of your career as a teacher, and the various complex mindset and strategic changes that you need to make in order to manage your learning, your career, and your life. So just that, which seems like a lot, doesn't it? So this should be interesting for you if you're a learner of English, because Elena talks about her experiences of doing what you're doing, but also this should be interesting for language teachers, and not just English teachers, but teachers of any language, really. And this includes people at any stage of their teaching career. If you're just considering becoming a teacher, including non-native teachers of English, if you're just considering doing that, or if you're already doing that and you're in the sort of early stages of your career, or if you've been doing it for some time and you're still attempting to deal with the challenges that this work poses. So hopefully this will be interesting for everyone. Okay, so anyway, I've just given you an idea of what you can expect from this episode and the conversation in it. I think it's really interesting. I really enjoyed talking to Elena. I'll talk to you again briefly at the end of the conversation, just to give you some information about how to find out more about Elena and her work. But now, let's get started, and here we go.
Luke, thank you so much for having me. This is exciting. This is one of, like, big dreams come true.
Oh, really?
Yes. I used to always recommend your podcast to my students when I was teaching ESL, because I started teaching online in 2010. And I was constantly looking for materials, and your podcast was on the list. So, yeah.
Well, to be honest, there wasn't a lot of other stuff at that time. It's not like, right, you know, of right. all the many different podcasts for learners of English,
yeah, exactly,
mine was at the
yes.
top. There was maybe about three or four.
Yeah, there weren't too many. You're right. Yeah, not too many.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, all right. Now, you interviewed me last week for your podcast, and that was interesting. And I got to kind of, you know, I got to talk about my story of the origin story of Luke's English podcast and so many other things. Mm-hmm. But what I want to do here is talk to you because, well, I should say, first of all, I guess I first heard about you, I'm not sure how long ago, 5, 6, 7, 8 mm-hmm. years ago, perhaps. I think it was you had a Facebook page, mm-hmm. a sort of support mm-hmm. group for teachers.
Yeah, I did, yes.
And also, I think some of my colleagues recommended you to me as someone mm-hmm. I might want to contact, you know, and you had, I think you had a course for English
yes,
teachers.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I kind of was aware of you then.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing like working with teachers primarily since 2014. And that was following several years of teaching ESL online to mainly Russian speaking audience. And then after the war started in 2014, it was really difficult. I mean, I felt that burden of like, oh, here's what it's like when your audience is really only one country and something happens to that one country, and then it just throws everything off. And yeah, I could no longer do the things that I was doing. I think at the time I was kind of maybe ready to try something different, but this really pushed me. You know, I feel like, yeah, my podcast, you were saying how we often are so reluctant to like invite people to take action. And we ourselves as human beings are just very reluctant to take action unless there's something that just kind of pushes us. And in my case, it was circumstances. It was like, I think I would have continued teaching Skype lessons for a while, but I could no longer do that with the audience that I had. It was no longer viable, and people were going through a lot of turmoil. And so I had to rethink stuff. And that's when I began using English as the language for my marketing and for my content creation.
So you switched from, let's say, a client base, if we can call it that, mm-hmm. in terms yeah. of students, But if we're talking about this from a sort of business point of view, you switch from having a client base that was mainly Russian speakers and you would communicate with them in Russian. But then when things...
Yes, and do all my marketing, yes, in Russian too. Mm-hmm.
But then when things got very complicated, starting in 2014, you decided that, you couldn't really continue in that way. Yeah. And so you decided to open up and do everything in English and start to reach people from all over the world. Now, let me just kind of try and go back a little bit. So I think I've probably done an introduction to this where I kind of briefly explain what it is that you do. So people know that you work with online teachers and find ways to help them manage their careers, essentially, and deal with the personal and professional sides of that, you know, the mindset changes, the strategic stuff. And so you've kind of like seem to have gone through various sort of career changes yourself to get to this point. So can we go back a bit? And actually, I want to first of all ask you about your learning of English yourself. Right, because you're an English teacher now. You're then a teacher trainer, right? And now you are a sort of business coach for teachers.
Yeah.
So it's not just about how to teach, but how to manage all the rest of it, the sort of business side. But let's go all the way back to the beginning. So you're actually a learner of English. I don't know if you still consider yourself to be or what, but you certainly English is not your first language. Is that right?
No, it's not. Yeah, my first language is Russian. And I come from Crimea, which is in the south of Ukraine. And so I grew up speaking Russian and I took English at school, but it was like very, you know, basic. It's one of those, like we had a lot of hours of English, but we couldn't speak it. And so getting closer into my high school years, I started wondering, like, what do I want to do? In terms of what I wanted to study, I really liked arts. I really liked literature and languages. And it was really exciting for me. But, you know, doing just Russian language or teaching Russian language and literature was not something that was as exciting as like trying to open up a new world with a new, by means of new language. And so that's how I got into English. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I could work on my English. And so at the time, my parents found a tutor for me and she worked at a university and she was very good. And we had two lessons a week, 2 hours each. So I had altogether,
How old were you? Sorry. How old were you at that time?
I think I was 15 or 16.
Okay.
Yeah, 15. Yeah. So I would go after school and do like 2 hours. And it was very interesting because, you know, she was preparing me for the test at a university level. And my English was, I mean, probably like A1 level for those of my listening. It's just like really just basics. I did not know much. And I remember coming to her home and she put on this audio tape with I think it was called Lady Bird Collection, and it was like one of those stories where for children, you know, but also for learning. And I think it was called Secret Garden or something. And she was like, well, listen to it for about 10 minutes and then you tell me what you heard. And I'm listening to it and I hear absolutely nothing. Like maybe some kind of tiny little words here and there, but I understand nothing. I think this is like, and I just feel so embarrassed. Here I am sitting here. She's about to teach me. She's going to figure out how to teach me. And I have, you know, I have no idea. And so at the end of it, she asked me, like, did you understand? I said, I didn't understand anything. It was really, really, really painful. And I came out of that lesson, I was crying. And my dad's like, well, if you don't want to take, you know, lessons with this teacher, we'll find another. No, I want to take lessons with her. She seemed to be very knowledgeable. And I loved her resources. She had like a ton, like you walk into her office, she had all these books and tapes. And I thought, yes, I definitely want to learn with her and from her. And so that's how I started. And I remember one time coming to her classes, and I overheard somebody else, like a student, another student before me, speaking to her in English. And I thought, wow, she's speaking Russian. Like, I will never be able to do that. And I remember saying this to myself because I was like, this is just impossible. Like, nobody can do it. And here we are.
So what happened then between that moment of you thinking there's no way I can do this to you know, what you can do now?
It was a lot of, she did a lot of training and like very intensively. She worked with me very intensively. And in the beginning, it was really, really hard. She took pretty much a level, she took me a level up, like where I was supposed to be, but I wasn't. And then she started giving me the materials on that level, like reading and listening, but listening with tape scripts, they were called at the time. So she would give me like stories to listen to, but with the tape script. So I would first work on the script, I would translate, and then I would listen, and then I would like try to connect the two. That was, I think, the most helpful. And of course, we worked on pronunciation and we worked on grammar. And so because we had a 2-hour slot, she could put like a ton of stuff into that class. And it was really, it was a lot of materials. In the beginning, I felt like I had to memorize a lot. To be able to even summarize a text, I would like read and understand, but I had to memorize because I couldn't yet, like I didn't have the words to put things into a sentence, or I didn't know how to put them into a sentence. So I started like memorizing chunks. And at first it was just almost like theater kind of thing, you know, like I'm just going to memorize and just trust that one day it will work. And, you know, parallel to that, I was learning grammar and I was working on pronunciation, which I loved more than anything because it was like these really simple dialogues that you could understand. But over time, though, I think 4 months later, she had to leave and I was kind of left on my own. And I took a headway pre-intermediate and and intermediate textbooks. Yeah, right. With the tapes that we had to find somebody, I don't know. And I just worked through them on my own. And in the summer, she came back. She was working in Moscow then, and she came back and we met. I bought like maybe 10 or 12 classes with her. Mm-hmm. And I came to the first session and she gave me assignments and I went back home and I'm reading through it. I was like, this is so easy. Like, I can't believe she's given me such easy tasks. And so I worked through this. It used to take me hours and now it's taking me like a short period of time. And I come to the class and I sit down. She's like, okay, you know, she gave me a text. Can you summarize it? And so I start summarizing. And in the past, she would stop me and she would correct me almost after every sentence. And here I am sitting there talking the whole time. Mm-hmm. And she had these glasses and she would like just put it on her. Like she was just like, raise the glasses. She would look at me and look at me and look at me. And I just keep talking and talking and talking. I think she gave me enough foundation. And then I just, the materials that I had, headway to just keep going.
Good advert for headway there, Oxford University Press.
I love those books, but they were, like you said, they were one of the few that were available. So that's what we got.
Yeah, good stuff. But so you were just sort of doing all that kind of controlled studying. Did you not have more casual kind of conversation stuff going on as well? Or was it?
It was not available at the time. I think my only conversational stuff happened the following year after that summer. We had some, you know, some interaction with Americans and somebody asked me, because they came and visited, and somebody asked me to come and translate casually. And I came in and I was able to translate and I was like, oh my gosh, I can translate. I totally know what they're saying. But it was we had very few options at the time, you know, and you probably know that it wasn't even the listening comprehension that I was learning from headway. The only thing I could do or improve it is by looking at tape scripts, right? And figuring out, oh, okay, you know, that's how they're saying this. So there was a lot of like classroom almost learning And the actual live language happened when I was listening to music. I was listening to Elton John, of all people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's interesting because 2 years ago, I got to go and see his show in New Orleans here.
Wow.
And it was very emotional for me. It was his last show, right? The Yellow Brick Road. And I was sitting there and hearing everybody singing all those songs and me, myself, singing all these songs and remembering how I used my like little dictionary to learn those words, specifically like the word sacrifice, right? That mm-hmm. I learned from his song, because the way he pronounces it is definitely not the way he pronounced the word, but he like breaks it into more syllables than it is. But I just had this surreal feeling, like here I am in New Orleans and I'm listening to this concert and there's all these people and they're all singing his songs and I see him on the stage and I'm here and I'm singing the songs and I totally get what's happening. And it's like my English, my journey to English started, my live English started with his songs. Cause that was like the only way. Cause also I had to like buy tapes because it's not like you can go on YouTube and listen to any song you wanted.
Mm. Ah, it's amazing, but a real success story then. What do you think, was there a key to this? I mean, what do you think was the core reason that it worked for you? Any idea? What was the sort of secret recipe?
I really did a lot of listening comprehension, and I think I focused a lot on listening and connecting it to the written language. So that thing that really inspired most of my learning, I did not like reading by itself. It would take a while for me to actually like reading by itself in English. And it was like a different story altogether, but like learning the language, connecting the way it sounds with the way it's written on the page was like magic. I felt like I could crack the code. It's also how I learned music too. There was a time my friend was playing something and she had notation on the piano and she was playing. And I thought it was just magic that she could look at some kind of squiggles on the page and that made music. And that's actually what pushed me into learning piano. And I did 7 years of that. And I still do piano on play the piano on a regular basis. So the magic just of connecting what you hear to what you see and how it comes from completely like this blubber of things that you don't understand to becoming crystal clear. It's just incredible. And I think hearing music as well and hearing the words and finally being able to understand, I think that was like the cherry on the top, you know, like it was just so, so incredible and so empowering.
I guess with music, you get that emotional reward, don't you, from understanding what you're hearing.
Yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
Music is, it's you can't only use music or songs to learn a language, you know, and this is true for English, of course, because as you said, like when Elton John sings the word sacrifice, he is it like five syllables?
Right, five syllables. That's why it took me forever. It's like, what the word is that? And of course, you didn't have ChatGPT to answer that question. So you had to like sit and listen and force yourself to kind of figure out what is this. And he, you know, you have to also understand that like, later when I learned about how the new movie that came out and how the guy actually learned Elton John's style.
You're talking about the film about him. What was
Rocket
it called?
Man. Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not see the film, but I did watch the like behind the scenes, and the man actually learned to play the piano for the movie. I mean, can you believe this? Like to play I have notes, notations of Elton John, and it like takes me a while to learn how to play it. But anyway, so, but he was saying the interesting part about him is he sang in one accent and he spoke in a different accent. And that I never thought of that, but that was kind of an interesting thing. But
that's a phenomenon, isn't it? That I did several episodes about this. Why do British people sing in American accents? It's a bit of a mysterious phenomenon, but one of them is, I guess, that the whole genre of this music, you know, sort of pop rock, does have its roots in America and sort of American soul, rock and roll, folk and sort of blues music. And so, you know, that's the language of that kind of stuff. So that's when someone sings I, they sing it as ah, like that,
yes,
you know.
Exactly.
Like
it's not, yes.
It's not I want to hold your hand, but I want to hold your hand.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, I want to. So it's definitely, if you did it in an English accent, it wouldn't sound as good. I want to hold your hand. It sounds so corny. But also, there's other reasons as well. That's another story for another time. But it's certainly interesting that, when people sing, they do change their accent and they sing in an American accent for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you kind of, your English went really well. It kind of improved really strongly. And I guess now we're in your sort of your mid-20s or something like that.
Yes, I mean, I went to college then to study English. By the time I got to college, my English was at a good level. I tried to enter several universities in Kiev, and I could not because the competition was really high. So I went back to Crimea, and I went into like a smaller local college. And I worked there with a lot of Americans. They were teaching, and so my British accent becomes American, or more American, I should say, because of me hearing and being exposed to it all the time. But also, I did a lot of reading. That's where I actually fell in love with reading, is at college. And I had done a lot of reading before that in high school, but only like assigned reading. So I never read for pleasure. Now, there was a lot of assigned reading at college, but I really enjoyed what I was reading, like psycholinguistics or, the theory of language acquisition. And yes, I know, I'm such a nerd. Psycholinguistics, though, is so amazing. But nobody ever reads a book in psycholinguistics before they go to bed. But I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing.
What is it? Can you tell us briefly what that is?
Well, there's a lot of things in psycholinguistics is like how your brain activity and language is connected. One chapter that really, really spoke to me, it was very interesting, is how what happens to your language when there's deterioration due to Alzheimer's and dementia, and how that and how there are patterns, like, with certain types of dementia, you lose certain types of language abilities. And it was just incredibly interesting how that worked and how like learning a language and how your mother tongue and the way your brain works in your mother tongue then is translated into another language, and how you have to kind of shift the way your brain works. That idea with kind of dementia and stuff kind of got me to thinking, well, like, what if I get old and I lose English? Like, that was a really palpable thing that that prompted me to like, I need to teach my kids Russian because I don't know what's going to happen.
Do you think that's possible? Do you think that's
I don't know. I mean, there are different theories, of course. There are theories. There are people that have lost the language, the new language that they had acquired, or it has become less kind of prominent, I guess. So it's almost like when you have dementia, you might have more memories of your past as you were as a child. And so maybe there is, from that, you bring up a lot of of your language, your mother tongue. So I don't know. There's no like 100%. That's why I like to psycholinguistics and arts in general. There's no like, here is the answer. It's like, it can be this way, but it can also be this way. And it's just fascinating.
But that is that is absolutely fascinating. The sort of neurological connection between, yes, you know, the sort of language learning meets biology in a way.
Yeah. And at some point I was quite interested in sociophonetics as well. Like, so how our accents are formed by the places where we live. And I actually I was very interested in studying Appalachian English in the United States and its connection to Scottish English. Mm-hmm. And I even sent a paper to the University of Aberdeen when I was like looking for doctorate programs, and I was accepted into their doctorate programs in the University of Aberdeen. I even have the acceptance letter, but they did not have the funding. And so it was very expensive. That program is so like, because it's sociophonetics, that's very specific. Very few people study this, but I was really nerdy. I really was interested in the way, again, it goes back to the music of the language. I mean, doesn't it? It's like, how does language sound? Why are these like sounds disappearing, and these that don't make sense, they appear in the language? Because Appalachian English is quite interesting in itself. And I spent a year studying there, doing my master's in Kentucky. So all of a sudden I was like, this English sounds quite different. And then a year into it, people were like, you sound like you're from the Appalachian.
Well, because Appalachian English is a sort of classic accent. One of those very almost extreme American accents.
Right. Yes. And it's very, you know, unfortunately stereotypical. But I was really curious in where it came from. And so I was trying to connect that with Scottish. And I found a lot of parallels, and there were lots of articles. I loved, specific books on, you know, accents and pronunciation, the British Isles, and I was studying that. So fascinating. It's just talking about like language learning. It ended up becoming absolutely just my thing. And from there, surprisingly, when I moved to the US, I just went into teaching online. You know, and so because I couldn't get into the PhD program, so I was like, okay, well, if I can't get into PhD, I'm just going to like see how I can go online and maybe make a career teaching online.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can I ask you about your decision to move to the US? What prompted that move? And why didn't you move to England?
I got married.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, that's often.
Yes. And so my husband was already working here. In fact, I had spent quite a bit of time in, you know, North Carolina and Kentucky, and I had been to Tennessee and all those states around. And then he got a job in Louisiana, which is specifically New Orleans, and which at the time I called it New Orleans, which is incorrect, by the way. Yes, yeah, you have to say that.
That's how we say it in the UK. We call it New Orleans, and we also call it the other city, Los Angeles. But it's actually New. How do you say New Orleans then?
New Orleans. Yes, yes. The more it just slides into like one syllable, Nolans, like some people just say Nolans, like Nolans, and it's okay. That's when they know that you're local.
But the stress there is on the or part, isn't it? Yeah, New Orleans.
It's not Orleans, yeah. And so we moved here, and this is an like, the talk about accents, that's a melting pot of all kinds of accents. And in the beginning, I had trouble understanding some of them. It was embarrassing. I had to like ask my husband to say, what did he say again? What did he say? It's interesting because today I can understand. I have no issues. And then my friends from other parts of the U.S. come and visit. Like, I have no idea what this person is saying. But I learned to hear the music again. I just had to get my ear attuned to it.
Interesting you keep talking about music, because New Orleans is such a musical place.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like the birthplace of jazz music, isn't it, really?
Yes, Louis Armstrong.
Wonderful. I'd love to visit. They speak French in some parts of Louisiana
They do, yes. We went one time, my husband and I went to Brobridge, which is one place, like very famous, the birthplace of Zydeco music, which is the Cajun French kind of, has lots of influence. And that was the first time when I would walk like down the street in their little town, Brobridge, and I would hear people speak French. And I was like, where am I, people? What is going on? And yeah, the locals, they're just sitting there on Saturdays and they talk to each other in French. It's Cajun French. Now, my kids are in French immersion school here. And so both of them speak French. But Cajun French is something that they study also as a local variation of French. But yeah, there's a lot of influence, French influence, and... It was interesting to hear it spoken in the United States. I don't see anywhere that I've been to anyway, such a big influence of French. You know, like usually you hear a lot of Spanish, you know, other languages depending on where you are. Like French, this is just steeped in it. And of course, there's the architecture, the stories, the legends, the Joan of Arc and all that, you know, you see that everywhere, Catholic churches.
I guess it was the last state, you know, to have been owned by France, right? I mean, it was the last state to be given, to sort of be given its independence from France. But anyway, right. So you kind of like, you've got to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. and after being steeped in language, you know, studying language and immersing yourself now, after having studied it, immersing yourself in English, and you kind of just living, breathing English, and you decided to then start teaching English or helping other learners of English to sort of follow in your footsteps, right?
So
you became an online English teacher. Was it mostly online?
Yes. I tried to, when I first got here, to get a job at a school, because that seemed like the easiest pathway, I guess. You know, you're in the United States. It's very unlikely that you're going to teach English as a second language as much. The funding was actually limited, but they did here in Louisiana. There's, well, everywhere in the U.S. right now, but there was in Louisiana a shortage of teachers, just regular public school teachers. And even though it wasn't like the thing that I wanted to do necessarily, but I was like, this is something I can do, you know?
So you're talking about teaching like American kids?
Yes, like regular school, teaching English, but at a regular school. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed and they liked me, but they couldn't, you know, because of the paperwork. And I was still like, being, you know, processed. My files were still being processed and they couldn't process my paperwork for me. And so I was like, well, okay, well, I'll try something myself. And by then I had had some students from that I had tutored in Ukraine that I started tutoring, and then word of mouth. And I did a little bit of marketing, but it was very interesting too. This idea of how marketing worked, like word of mouth was so strong that even though I was doing marketing and I was putting myself out there and I had a blog on Blogger, you know, and we had this Google Plus or whatever else we had at the time. Yes. And I couldn't get clients that way, but I had a ton of clients through word of mouth. And I did that for a few years. And mainly, obviously, all of my students were Russian speaking students until the war started. And then I had to kind of reinvent myself. And that's when I decided it was scary, but it was also a great opportunity. It pushed me to say, OK, here are the things that I don't want to do. Like, I don't want to teach generic English anymore. I don't want to teach test preparation. I don't want to do business English anymore, because I used to, like, anybody would come to me, I will teach you anything. So I kind of let go of jack of all trades. And I had to, like, find my, I guess what they call it, unique selling point, or selling proposition, whatever this is. But really, I had to find that my English was good enough as a non-native speaker, which was a lot of mindset work.
That was confidence, was it?
Yes. Yeah. Because, like, I was okay as a teacher for the Russian speaking audience. In my mind, I was confident enough. But am I good enough to go out there and offer my services to people who could be looking for the so-called native speaker? Like, would I be a good person to teach them? And so that's where a lot of work had to happen. And I narrowed down my niche to work with students on accent training, because I had done that at college. And that's when my work with teachers began as well. I had kind of two niches for a while until I let go of teaching students, and now I'm working primarily with teachers.
Okay. What was the work that you had to do?
To accept my English? Is that the question?
I don't know, really. Because you said you had to get to a point where you felt confident enough to, you know, sell your services.
And you
said a lot of work had to be done. Was that just kind of like on your own English skills, on your teaching skills, or just your own mindset?
I think it's mainly mindset, because I was confident in my teaching, but like to see myself as good enough as somebody who can teach English as a non-native teacher and just be just as effective, and somebody that people would hire and pay money to without speaking my mother tongue, you know? So that was a lot of work.
So what did you tell yourself? What did you have to tell yourself at that point?
So one of the things was I figured out that I walk this journey that most of my students are walking, right? From not speaking the language to wanting to speak it with confidence. And I know exactly how it feels. And I found the strength in being able to go from the level of not being able to speak the language to the level of confidence. And I felt like that's what my students wanted. And they wanted to have somebody who can relate to their experiences. And so when I figured that out, like, this is actually great. I can actually be more useful to non-native speakers as a teacher, as a non-native speaker, because I walked that journey, because I have that unique understanding and the level of compassion of what it means to learn a language from scratch and to get to a point of confidence. And a lot of them needed that, and a lot of them found that inspiring. And that's how I was able to use that as a mindset, because otherwise you constantly go back and, well, but I'm never going to be paid what other people are being paid. But when you see yourself as, well, wait a minute, there's something I can offer. And that really makes a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, there's this big sort of conversation about native and non-native speakers that goes on, right? And non-native speakers face a lot of pushback, and there's a lot of kind of accent prejudice and all the rest of it out there and stuff like that. But the fact is that that non-native speakers who teach English can be, you know, they have a perspective on learning English that native speakers don't have. And it's not, you know, it's really not black and white. It's not just a case of native speakers are always better teachers. No, non-native speakers are better. It's really kind of almost case by case basis. It depends on all sorts of factors. But non-native speakers definitely can be very, very, very insightful and very, very accessible and inspiring for learners of English, for sure.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that if I am able to, for some people, I would be like a better help and guide in specific situations. If I just focused on those people in my mind when I go out and market, like, don't just go out and market to like people that want supposedly a native speaker and try to say or try to sound or try to be like a native speaker. Try to be yourself and show to people how you can help them with the tools you already have. And with the story, your own story of learning the language, inspire them. And when they feel inspired, they feel this affinity, they can trust you to guide them through the process, even though you're not a native speaker.
Yeah, very interesting. So then now, we've gone from sort of learning English all the way through to learning to be a teacher yourself, through to sort of teacher training, helping other teachers.
Yeah.
And now we are at the stage where you're a really sort of a business coach as much as a teacher trainer. You're a business coach. Can you tell me about the work that you do now then? And, you know, what sort of how you help teachers and the sort of challenges that many teachers, English teachers, have these days and how you try to help them?
Yeah, I actually work with teachers of foreign languages. And it doesn't matter whether they teach English or other languages. That is one thing that I wanted to do because it really didn't matter. At a certain point, most of language teachers find themselves in a situation where I found myself in, where you trade so much time for money, you burn out, and in the end, you really work with a handful of students. And there's very little impact. Even though you're online, you're sort of recreating your Skype room, right? Or now Zoom room, but at the time it was Skype room. And there was a lot of burnout. And I was trying to figure out myself, like, how can I make it easier for myself? How can I make teaching languages just as effective, but without one-on-one classes or, you know, group lessons? Yes.
I was just going to say, most of the people listening to this are on the other side. They're learners. Mm. They're the sorts of people who would learn from people like you and me or other teachers. They might not necessarily realize how or why teachers can be completely exhausted and why burnout can happen.
Yes.
Can you just sort of paint a picture of what that might be like, you know, from the other side?
Yes. So that's a good point, Luke, because, a lot of students, when they go on bigger websites, right, where they find teachers, they may not realize that, you know, for many teachers, this is not just like, this is my side gig. I mean, there are some people that definitely it's just something they do for fun, you know, for experience, but many teachers are doing that professionally and they take this job really seriously and they want to, you know, teach a language and then they do everything to like stand out on this platform with a bazillion of other teachers and it's really difficult. And so then they get students and when you get students, you pretty much like fill up your schedule, 5, 7, 8 classes a day. And while it seems like it's nothing because, you know, at least you're not in front of a classroom, you're just like having a casual conversation. It's not a casual conversation because there's a lot of work that goes in it behind the scenes. You prepare for classes, you maybe prepare homework, maybe you do some kind of different activities for your students to keep them engaged. And over time, you realize that like, your classes might be over after 5 to 6 hours, but then you have several hours of preparation. And then supposedly one day you want to leave this platform so that you can work for yourself, because many of the teachers, like I said, they're professional. And for that, you need to sort of figure out marketing. And by the time you're done with teaching in person and preparation for your teaching, the last thing you want to do is work on your marketing. Right. So even if you do anything, you know, maybe record a podcast or YouTube videos, you can't stay consistent with it. Or if you do stay consistent, it's kind of like really chaotic and all over the place. And now with the overly saturated market, if you don't have a strategy, it's like it almost becomes like a waste of time or something that you tell yourself, oh, I'm doing something so that one day I can leave this platform. But really the platform, and even if you do leave, like it's very hard to imagine yourself teaching a language outside of one-on-ones. I had to really challenge myself as a one-on-one teacher. And one thing that challenged me was having kids, because like, okay, I can no longer do 5 to 7 to 8 hours straight teaching classes, and I cannot hire help because I'm in the US and, you know, I can't just take kids to some kind of daycare. It's super expensive. I had to figure out a way to do it. And I started experimenting with teaching. Most of my students were kind of A2, B1, B2. But I experimented with teaching through voice chats. Yes, voice chats. So this is what now they're showing as like this AI powered learning, which I don't think this is not what I am interested in. But I started experimenting with some students by giving them prompts instead of doing classes and giving them assignments. So the prompt would be, tell me about your, like, we could work, like, take a segment for 3 or 4 weeks and work only on tenses. But I would add communicative approach and give prompts like, tell me about your first experience going to the zoo, for example. Mm-hmm. Not the zoo, but like your travel, your worst travel experience, your best travel experience.
Right.
But people will be forced, for example, to use a very specific tense form. And as they send their voice messages, I then check them asynchronously, right? So not in the same time. Mm. And the person can then re-record themselves. And that's where I found a lot of learning happening much faster than in one-on-one classes. I found that the students were more, as they were responding and listening to my feedback, they were able to improve their language skills and speaking skills much faster because they had like tiny little fragments of learning throughout the week, as opposed to meeting with me once a week and then not doing anything between classes.
Yeah, so it's sort of you sort of flipped the class online class
exactly,
system.
Yes.
And it meant that so people were basically sending you voice recordings, then you had a bit of time to respond to them a bit later. It broke up
your
day.
When my kid was taking a nap.
Exactly. While you're there with the baby in your arms and doing all the things that we do.
Yes.
Your students are out there like getting your prompt whenever, and then like taking the time to record and sending it to you. Just allows you all that much more flexibility. So that pushed you in a different direction away from the sort of one-to-one model where you're locked into a certain time into a slightly more time flexible thing. And then I guess the next extension to that was courses. Is that right?
Yes. And then I started teaching teachers that approach. Mm-hmm. And when I began teaching that in 2016, people were like, you're kidding me. Like this is never going to work. This is just not. But over time, Like, I kept talking about this, you know, teaching more sustainably, teaching smarter. That was like my thing. Like, we can't constantly be tied to hours. I mean, I still teach one-on-one. I still coach one-on-one, but I focus a lot on sustainability. Like, is your business sustainable? Are you able to take as many students as you want to? Do you have that capacity? Do you have that format right now to take more students? And when teachers discovered that they actually can do a lot more with asynchronous learning, and then it be.
Hello, listeners. I just need to interrupt here because at this point in the recording, the Zoom call that we were using froze. In fact, Elena's side of it froze. And so she kind of got cut off mid-sentence. And we didn't manage to kind of fix it for a minute or so. So I just need to fill in what Elena was saying. So Elena at this point is talking about synchronous versus asynchronous learning. And from the teacher's point of view and the student's point of view, I suppose, how actually asynchronous learning can be a really effective way of doing things. And for the teacher, this can be game-changing because it means that you're no longer trading hours for money. So synchronous learning would be where, from the learner's point of view, you're learning with the teacher there and then. So it's in the form of lessons, live lessons, we would call them, you know, in a classroom or in a Zoom call or something. So having lessons right there with the teacher. That's synchronous learning, learning at the same time that you are spending time with the teacher. Then asynchronous learning is where the teacher gives you tasks and you go off and do those tasks in your own time, right, according to your own schedule. And then you do the task, you then sort of send the results off to the teacher who checks them in their own time and you do it like that. So that's basically the difference. And Elena at this point is saying that she realized, and, you know, teachers can realize, that they can essentially charge the same amount of money for asynchronous learning, for asynchronous teaching, as they can for synchronous teaching, which is actually very liberating for a teacher because it means that you're not locked in to a potentially very, very demanding schedule, daily schedule of back-to-back one-to-one lessons. Instead, you can sort of send out tasks to your learners. You can maybe take on more learners, send out their tasks, and basically manage your time more easily. Okay, so that's kind of what Elena is saying at this point. So let's now continue from the point where the Zoom call recovered and stopped being frozen. Here we go.
For your month of asynchronous learning, as you would charge for a month of one-on-one classes. And that's like a very foreign concept, like, well, but an hour with the person. Well, you're not, but you're giving them even more practice and more feedback and more different activities. And so once people get really okay with that and with selling like that, and when they free up more time, they're able to do more marketing, more strategic marketing, not just like throw spaghetti on the wall marketing, which we all used to do. Then they get more people in, and then they're able to actually start creating courses. Because usually what happens is like you're exhausted, right? You're teaching one-on-one, and then a Facebook ad pops up and says, hey, don't you want to create a course that will help you make six figures in your sleep? And you're like, sure, you know, you have no time, no mental capacity, no emotional bandwidth to create a course. And you jump into a course on a promise that maybe you launch it, and then you'll get six figures. And that sounds really enticing, but it usually doesn't work, you know? And so the model helped teachers get to that point, manageable steps. It's kind of like, you know, you're eating an elephant, you know, one bite at a time, as opposed to the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Ah, very interesting. We're going to have to wrap the conversation up, though, because, you know, it's quite appropriate for the topic of conversation, you know, like I've got to rush off and pick my son up from daycare. You know, real life is knocking on the door saying, sorry that you're going to have to stop this conversation now. But Well, I guess two things I want to say. One thing is that I think you're doing really great work, and you know, you're helping out a lot of teachers and helping teachers to manage their time, manage the huge challenge, which it can be, you know, the huge challenge of being able to continue teaching sort of in a sustainable way, in a way that allows the teacher to maintain their energy levels and their enthusiasm and all that stuff. And that's really important.
Because it benefits the students, right? You know,
exactly.
In the long run, it benefits the students, because if they are exhausted, students can feel it. And they're just as exhausted. Yeah.
So, you know, thanks for supporting the teachers. And I hope that all the learners out there also understand the importance of doing that. And the second thing I wanted to say is, how do people sort of follow your work and sort of get into the stuff that you're doing? Because there will be teachers listening to this as well. There'll be people who were in the same position as you a number of years ago, or similar position, who will kind of be interested in learning more about the things you've done and the things that you recommend. So how can people find your work and stuff like that?
Yes. So I'm on Instagram at Elena Motonono. You can find me and follow me. And I'm there quite often. And I really enjoy that platform. And I use it to connect with teachers. I also have a YouTube channel where I post my content, also at Elena Motonono. And mainly it's just live lessons or just short videos on subjects that people mainly ask me questions in, you know.
That's about the business work of being a teacher, right? Rather than than teaching English stuff.
Yes. This is, thank you. That's it's mainly for teachers. Now, all I do actually is for teachers because I just decided to dedicate most of my resources, most of my time to it. Yeah. So I really enjoy doing that. And I have a podcast that you came on. It's called Online Bound, and it is for language teachers who want to learn more on how to teach languages online in a more sustainable way. And I talk to people who are already doing it or who are aspiring to do that. And I talk about not just the regular business tips that you will find anywhere else. I talk about the emotional and all strength and support that we need to make this journey possible, because we can't really move forward on tips alone. There's a lot of resilience that we need to build, the grit, the support of our communities where we find ourselves, and that plays a huge part.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
yes.
Great. Really interesting. Thanks for telling us all about your story and all your experiences.
Thank you for inviting me. Yes.
And, yeah, no, it's a pleasure. It's been very interesting. And yeah, thanks for your time. And listeners, you can listen to my conversation with Elena. She interviewed me all about, we touched on all sorts of things, but you kind of got into the sort of reasons I started doing my show and the kind of
how it was in the beginning and how it is now.
Yeah, exactly. The path of, that I've taken from just becoming an English teacher and then going into setting up my podcast and the considerations behind, you know, my choices relating to doing this as a job, you know, as crazy as it may seem. You guys, you can listen to that. It's that episode should be available now, I suppose. I think we'll probably end
up.
It's
going to be available in, we're now in March, so it will be available in April.
Yeah. I think they'll probably, this episode will go up around about the same time as that one, I expect. Anyway, thanks again and have a lovely day.
Thank you, Luke.
In New Orleans.
You too. It's quite windy. I imagine that's messing up a lot of my connection too. So,
Windy New Orleans. Hopefully hopefully it doesn't get too windy, because it does get very windy there.
It does. Yeah. Not good winds.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Luke. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. And all right. Take care and, you know, speak to you soon.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so we're pretty much at the end of the episode now. I just want to say thanks again to Elena for her time and for talking to us about her story and everything like that. So just a reminder of where you can find Elena. So there's her website, elenamutonono.com. You can find her on Instagram, which is at Elena Mutonono. Her YouTube, let me just find that out, actually. Her YouTube is, unsurprisingly, Elena Mutonono again. So that's it. That's the Instagram, YouTube, and website. Ah, the fourth thing, her podcast. It's called Online Bound. Online Bound. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And you should see in the list, probably fairly recent, a recent episode is the one where she interviewed me and she asked me about, well, the things I mentioned just earlier, you know, about how I started and the sort of the challenges to some extent that I face in terms of managing my time and dealing with the way that I communicate with my my audience and all sorts of other things. Okay, so you can listen to it. It'll be a recent episode of the Online Bound podcast. All right, so that's it. That's basically all I needed to do at the end here. Instagram, Elena Mutonono. YouTube, Elena Mutonono. Website, elenamutonono.com. Podcast, Online Bound. You'll find links in the description. Okay, how was this episode for you? Did you relate to the things that Elena said about learning English? Did you relate to the things that she said about being a teacher? Because I have quite a few teachers listening to this show, and maybe you are someone considering becoming an English teacher at some point. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff to consider, like how do you find clients or learners? How do you find them? How do you manage your time? Are you just going to spend all of your day teaching one-to-one lessons back to back? That can be pretty tiring. So how can you try and break out of that sort of system? Talking about making online courses or flipping learning into a more asynchronous approach. Lots of things. And you can find, if you listen to Elena's podcast, she talks about all of these considerations. Her podcast is for teachers, for language teachers. Okay, so if you know, if that's something you're interested in doing or something you're already doing and you're kind of trying to deal with the business side of it and all the many things that relate to that, not just the business strategy and marketing things, but just the personal, emotional, mindset-related issues, then you could listen to Elena's podcast and it could give you some perspective, it could give you some advice and inspiration, okay? Yeah, links in the description. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. That's the end. All right, that's it. No more rambling at the end, nothing else. We're just going to have a clean break at the end of the episode. Thanks so much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. I will speak to you very soon, but for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humor and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.